Hi, welcome to the podcast. My name is Sarah Sidaway, and I'm a member of the SCAR podcast team. Through the Conflict 625 class, Creating Inclusive Communities, taught by Professor Jafari, Fall 2018. In this class, we are exploring ways we can utilize inclusivity in our community at SCAR and George Mason University. And here today we have the lovely Tamara Hamilton. Welcome, Tamara.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm glad to be here.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what brings you to the podcast today?
Well, I'm a member of the SCAR community and a member of the 625 class. And I have an interest in podcasts for a long time, and I think it's a way that we might explore helping people to feel included so that even if they weren't online in a class, if they were out of the country or out of pocket for any reason, perhaps they can click on a podcast and feel connected to SCAR.
Great. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've been at SCAR almost 2 years now, and I'm both a budding scholar in the field as well as a longtime practitioner. So I have a very unique boutique business practice called Audacious Coaching, and I enter into organizations to help them have difficult conversations around race and inclusion.
Oh, perfect. What might the audience benefit from knowing about you and your journey as it relates to inclusion?
Well, my journey starts back many, many years ago as a teenager when I was an eyewitness to the Watts Rebellion. And anybody who knows me knows that I always lead with that piece of information because it helped me to understand the cost of conflict at a very early age. So I've spent most of my career as a facilitator, as a coach, and as a trainer involved in helping people to bridge their differences. I was able to do that as a teenager coming up in the 60s when there was a focus on helping young people try to solve some of the racial dilemmas that were plaguing the entire country. And now we're right back to where I was at age 16, so it's rather shocking to find the country so divided. And I feel that with the academic support that I'm getting from SCAR and previous practice and academic work, that I might be able to be a help to communities that are having conflict around race and inclusion.
Great. And how has SCAR demonstrated its inclusiveness to you?
Well, I hope I'm the test case for inclusion at SCAR. I came to an orientation. I guess it was an introduction to SCAR. And when I came, the students who were in charge and guiding us around, you know, we're kind of like wide-eyed wonder, you know, will we fit in? Will there be a place for us? All those questions you have when you're exploring an academic program. I met Molly Tepper then. I think I met RJ in the Burton Library because we spent some time there getting oriented. But the students who took us around to various classes, they were friendly. They helped us to ask the questions we didn't even know to ask. And I remember them taking us into Sarah Cobb's narrative practice class. And we were able to sit there for about 15 minutes and get a flavor of what she was doing and what the students were doing. It was interactive. And she welcomed us. It wasn't as if we had intruded into her class. And then the students talked to us about the things they liked most about SCAR, the things that they found challenging, but reassured us that it was a very supportive community. And it has proven to be true. And I think for me, because I look for ways to be involved through the Graduate Student Council, anytime I see there's something going on in 5183, I try to attend. And if there's a dialogue and difference, I try to attend. So I think it's been a two-way street, me wanting to be included and SCAR wanting me to feel included.
And do you feel like that has been key in inclusivity is not only the way Eskar has approached you, but the way you have approached Eskar.
Yes. I think some people, most people wouldn't know that I was an introvert. But I am. See, you laugh at that. But I am a big introvert. So I'm not a great networker by natural tendency, but I push myself out of my comfort zone. So when I've seen students sitting around in the library, I would introduce myself and strike up a conversation. I think it's a two-way street because everybody won't have the same level of energy around making themselves feel included. And of course, with people being commuters, we really don't have a space, and we do have an Eskar team working on that. But if we had a space, it would be even easier. So yeah, it is a two-way street, and I think Eskar has to figure out not every student will feel comfortable reaching out like I did, and maybe through the work that our class is doing, there'll be lots of other ideas.
Great. And what did Eskar do specifically to help you feel included in its culture and environment?
I think the newsletter is just super. The newsletter is a vehicle to not only know what's going on, especially news that comes out of Eskar Advising Office, and there are always internships, and I have been able to apply for and receive fellowships to continue the work that I'm doing around community resilience. But I wouldn't have been able to have some of those fellowships had I not read it in the newsletter. So they are an equal opportunity source of giving, if I could say it like that, because there's so much in the newsletter. I think a lot of students miss a real treasure if they just gloss through it. But I learned early on in my career, if there's a department newsletter, a school newsletter, read it from top to bottom. And it was through the newsletter that I learned about the facilitation class that Dr. Chris Mitchell was doing. And that was out at Point of View. There were just a few students there, but it was the richest learning experience I've had so far at Eskar. But I wouldn't have known about it had I not read the newsletter. So I think that's a great vehicle.
Yeah, that sounds like that is for sure. How has Eskar helped you to be successful as a diversity and inclusion specialist? And can you give a little bit of information about how you are a diversity and inclusion specialist?
Yes, I when I entered Eskar in winter of 2017, I was already a diversity and inclusion specialist. But I wanted to add the competency around conflict resolution. And I was able to do that right off with not only the foundations class that Rich Rubenstein taught, because the foundations class gave me a framework, it gave me a theoretical foundation. And then I also had Tehama Lopez Bunyazi's class on conflict and race. And that one just took my head through the roof in terms of not only being deeply steeped in critical race theory, but just the way she approached the class. And so I felt like the class was designed exactly for me. I didn't know her, but the things that she brought to the class, her method of teaching, the projects that we worked on, I mean, our class actually went as a group and saw Get Out.
Oh, wow.
It was on the day that I think women were supposed to not come to work or come to school, but we decided to go to the movie so that we would continue our learning. And then we wrote reviews about the movie and had great discussions. So I think what Eskar has done is taken the theory from the textbook and allow me to apply it into the real world of my work. And my work involves going into organizations. Usually I get a call saying, we need someone to come in and do healing and reconciliation, or we need someone to come in and work with a team that's having issues around race, or we don't have any issues right now, but we want to start a diversity initiative. And then I'll go in and lead the steering committee around how they might look at diversity inclusion, what they might read, what are some of the deeper aspects of self-awareness that each committee member might have. And so I do some professional development, and then I do facilitation.
Oh, that's great. And why is inclusion important to you as an African American student?
Inclusion is very important to me, especially at ESCAR. I think I know two African American women in the doctoral program. Several have graduated from the master's program, so I'm not quite sure who's there. So when you walk down the hallways and you walk into classrooms and you don't see a reflection of yourself, it's still important that you feel it doesn't matter that I'm the only African American in the room. I have had classes where I have been the only American in the class because we are such an international community. But there's something about the materials that the professors select and the activities in terms of mixing up teams and practice sessions, so that I'm not a big team player when it comes to doing work in school. And that's because my schedule is so out of pocket most of the time, and I work odd times. The middle of the night is when I like to work. Nobody wants you to call them in the middle of the night.
Right.
And so, but I have stretched to work on teams, and I've found that when I have stretched, I've been rewarded by it. So inclusion is important because it helps a student to feel seen. It helps a student to be validated in their own identity, that we can all be different and we can all make a contribution, and our diversity is an asset.
Oh, that's beautiful. And how has Conflict 625, the class that we're both in right now, building inclusive communities, directly impacted your learning and your practice?
That's a hard question, only because I have to narrow it down because we don't have a whole lot of time. But it has impacted me in tremendous ways. First, having the experience of a blended class where we have students around the country and sitting in the media room or whatever that room is where we can have the screens up. So we have the live interaction in the group, and then we have our colleagues on the screen. That's been interesting because I've shied away from online classes, mainly because it's hard for me to read online. Just because my eyes are almost 67 years old, so reading a screen has its challenges. And then also because it was just so much to read online, I find that people get really long-winded online. And so trying to track all of that has been a little challenging, but I decided I was going to, again, get out of my comfort zone and try to engage. And I think many people will notice I was a little slow engaging at the beginning of the year, and then I finally, you know, said, okay, buckle up, you know, you can do this. And it's been really good, because when you have the online and the discussion boards, people start adding in extra material beyond what our professor has required, and some of those materials I have actually used in my practice. So it's important to have this inclusive community because, one, I'm getting more acclimated into the online aspect of learning. And then, two, when I walked into a new client that was starting right at the beginning of class, much of what I was learning in the class, I could turn around the very next week and use it with my clients. So that's why I like the theory and practice aspect of our class.
That's great. And being in a blended class, do you have any thoughts about how ESCAR can increase inclusivity, especially for online students? Do you feel like the blended class is beneficial for creating that feeling of inclusion?
Yes, because it changed my mind. It changed my point of view. I think more classes should be blended, because there have been times, like this Thursday, I have an assignment in Prince George's County. By the time I make it back up to Reston, it's going to be close to 4:30. I can just stop in at home and jump on the computer and be right on time for class. Halfway through class, I have an interview with our cable station again. It's a 20-minute interview, but I can plug in my car and stay connected to the class all the way till I get to the door of the television station, run in there for 20 minutes, and come back out and plug right back into class and only miss a small segment. So I think with the way our lifestyles are now, with it being a 24-hour day for some people, that the blended way is a good way to go. Plus, it gives us a sense of how to include people who are not sitting directly across from us. As students get out into the real world of work, they're going to find that more and more companies are having Zoom rooms or WebEx rooms. So it's becoming, one of my clients, there was a 10 o'clock meeting last week. It's really hard to get on the 66 to make a 10 o'clock meeting in Arlington. And I was going to do it. And then I found out nobody was coming in. The person said, oh, we're all just going to jump on our computers and jump on our screens. So if you do come, it'll probably be you and one other person. And that was a sigh of relief. So that I got on my camera too, and I was still able to stay connected to the meeting.
That's great. And what about in your professional career? How have you seen inclusivity utilized in a way that you have found beneficial?
I have several examples. In one case, the organization advocates for the LGBTQ community. And in that community, I learned that when you walk in as a vendor, as a consultant, they graciously offer you a one-hour class on non-gendered language. I took gender and violence over the summer, but I never really thought heavily about non-gendered language, how we might walk into a room and say, hey, you guys, well, there's some people in there that don't want to be identified as guys, and you would never know. So I curtailed my language to say, hello, or all of you. In this organization, you introduce yourself with your preferred pronouns. So now whenever I convene a meeting, a healing circle with them, a small town hall with them, which is part of the work that I'm doing, I introduce myself, and then I say, my preferred pronouns are she, her, hers. When others introduce themselves, they do the same. When I first entered the organization, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. So the feedback I got was, oh, it was a great session, but she failed to ask about or introduce her pronouns, nor the pronouns of her team. So when we went back the next time, we did that, and people just loved it. So that particular community takes it very seriously about non-gendered language and understanding pronouns.
That's great.
Because you never know who you're talking to. You could be talking to someone who's a member of the trans community, and you start using the wrong pronoun, and it's offensive, and you don't even know that you're offending people.
That's very true. Mm-hmm. And so thinking again about the SCAR community within George Mason, what challenges do you see for inclusivity, and do you have any thoughts about possible solutions?
The biggest challenge, and I think it's any campus where you don't have a real student lounge, where if you come in any time of day, you know that you might be able to engage in a conversation, ask a question, have a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, make new friends. I find that since so many people work or they live in anywhere from Manassas to Woodbridge, people are all over the place. There was one student that came all the way from Clinton, Maryland. Well, he doesn't have time to hang out after class, and usually nobody does. So trying to find natural ways to connect, I think SCAR could use Point of View more, because once you go out there, you love it. And I found that I just wait for events at Point of View so I can go. But I think at the beginning of the year, if we knew once a quarter there was going to be a student faculty gathering at Point of View, and it could be the kind of gathering where maybe there's no real agenda, but it's where you can come, bring your questions, bring your homework, bring your dissertation, and just have study pods all over that beautiful facility. I think just utilizing that more. And then Founders Hall, I noticed that when I went to the Praxis conference, there's such a big space down there where you can put in round tables, and we could reserve that Founders Hall and say this is Escar night or Escar day, and have pizza and music and maybe show more films so that we have movie nights or movie afternoons, because some people want to get away right at 7 o'clock and some people are there until 10. So maybe there's sometimes the movies might start at 3 or 2:30 to catch that those who go to class at 4 o'clock, and then have just repeat it maybe at the end of the 4 o'clock class would be 7, so repeat it at 7:30, but just have a film series. And I think getting more ideas from the students as to how they would like to connect.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tamara. You've brought so many beneficial thoughts to this podcast, and I'm sure for the SCAR community and anyone else that may be listening to this podcast, you've brought additional thoughts that are extremely beneficial to the conversation surrounding inclusivity and finding ways to help people feel more welcome. Thank you so much for coming today.
I am very happy, and I'm just going to add one more footnote.
Yes, of course.
I was thinking we should end every podcast with, so what are you reading now?
Oh, that's a good
and
idea.
I just thought of this. I'm reading Mindful of Race by Ruth King. Mindful of Race. And Ruth King says, and she's using mindful practices in connection with race, and she says racism is a heart disease and it's curable.
Wow.
I love that. It's a heart disease and it's curable. I think that SCAR faculty and staff might take a look at that book, because it takes a different approach to combating racism. So I think we should end every podcast with, so what are you reading? And I hope this takes off, mm-hmm. because we have so many more interesting people that we could interview.
Fantastic ideas.
And thank you for your questions.
Of course. Thank you for being here again today.